let's dive in.
Here we go.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the Do Care podcast. This is episode 43. I am your host, Mary McGee. Our creator and co-host, Georgie Corkery, will not be joining us today, but we wish her well in finishing up their master's program.
Yay!
Actually, by the time this episode comes out, Georgie might be defending.
How might exciting. Be on might, their way to being a master.
Might be a master.
That's so
incredible,
exciting.
Incredible. So on this podcast, we discuss topics we're really passionate about, and we bring on guests to also talk about their passions and projects that they do care about. This can be anything related to queer arts, ecofeminism, sexual positivity. Today, we have Liz Whitaker joining us. Liz, can you introduce yourself and your pronouns?
Yes, my name is Liz. My pronouns are she, they, kind of used interchangeably. And I am a theater practitioner living and working on the lands of the Ute, Goshu, and Eastern Shoshone people, colonially known as Salt Lake City, Salt Lake Valleys, and Utah Valleys. And I lately specialize in intimacy direction for theater and intimacy coordination for film and television.
How exciting. I am thrilled to have you on today. We found out about you, actually, because Georgie Corkery, the avid local journal enthusiast and radio aficionado that they are, found an article about you and your work on intimacy coordination in theater and forwarded along to me. I have known you for quite a long time, probably a decade, I want to say.
Yeah. I don't know.
Oh my goodness.
Time is weird.
I've known you forever. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Time is weird, yes. So before we dive into our topic, intimacy coordination, I first want to take a few moments to do little icebreakers with you. Liz, okay. What do you care about today?
I care about joy. I care about joy because it is a beautiful part of being human and helps us deal with the non-beautiful parts of being human.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And also, I think joy, this is something my mentor talked about, joy is central to harm reduction.
Ooh.
When we are laughing, when we are joyful, when we are experiencing pleasure and happiness, we are way less likely to hurt each other. And there's a sticky thing mm-hmm. about this where I think sometimes those of us who are on the forefront of fighting for justice and fighting for liberation and fighting to end genocide and fighting for equity and all of these things, all the things that our world is still not great at, I think we sometimes feel guilt about feeling joy.
Yeah.
I shouldn't focus on happiness when children are dying in Gaza.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But if you allow yourself to experience the joy of having a dance party in your living room, of having a night with friends, that doesn't have to take away from the work you are doing in social justice
mm-hmm.
and will actually make you a better tool for bringing justice about. So I do care about joy.
That's a really, really great answer.
Thanks.
In a similar vein, I care about vulnerability and being open to feeling things like joy, but also being open to connection.
Yeah. Preach.
Yeah.
That's where the good shit happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
On stage and off.
On stage and off. The first icebreaker we talk about is the cats we've seen. The reason we talk about this is because when we talk about cute things, it brings us a lot of serotonin. And we want to share that with other people. And it's a great practice to think about really, really cute things. I'll go first. My little cat Crookshanks is just the cutest little bean. I'm obsessed with her. She is so loud, so chatty, and her voice is quite screechy. I have a new roommate coming in, so there's an empty room, and she's just been sitting in the empty room, like, yodeling.
That's beautiful.
It's really funny. And I work from home, so I'll just be working, and then I hear her, like, wah, wah, wah,
She's like casting her spells upon the room.
I love that. Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. So that's my little kitty cat story. Liz, have you interacted with any cats recently?
Not recently, in part because I am tragically allergic to cats, but I still love them. So the two cats that come to mind is a cat that I've never met, but that I follow on TikTok named Nimbus. And Nimbus is very talkative and very zoomy, and I love Nimbus videos.
Can you describe everything? Like, what does Nimbus look like?
Nimbus is, like, white and super fluffy, and their owner calls him the Pirari.
The Pirari?
Because he does this, like, rawr thing. And so they'll record his Ferrari noises, and then sometimes the Ferrari is a question. It's a and it's like my favorite thing. So I watch a lot of Nimbus videos, and then when I'm visiting family in California, my mom and stepdad have a cat named Coco. Ooh. And I just take an allergy pill and suck it up. And Coco is so cute. And every night at like 9 or 10 p.m., they do Coco training because he has a bunch of tricks. So they have a little spot on the ground. They say spot. And he goes to a spot. And they have a round. And he walks around. My favorite one he does is kick. They have like a little ball. And he goes over. And with his little paw, he goes like, and kicks the little ball.
This is Coco?
Yeah,
that's Coco. So cute.
Coco is Francois. Ah! Yeah.
So, Coco. That's so cute.
Those are the cats.
That's really cute. Thank you. I really appreciated that. That brought a lot of joy. I really wish my cats could do tricks. I really wish my cats were outdoor cats. Mm. And I think they do too. But they just refuse to wear leashes or collars or harnesses. So it's not going to happen.
Inside they are.
I bought them a cat stroller. Thinking it'd be really cute to take them on picnics in the park. And they hated it.
Oh, never mind.
Oh, no, I don't like this. This was more for me than you.
Sorry, children.
Sorry, children. But you can't be cute for me.
Yeah.
So I guess I will. I guess I have to be a good parent and let that go. Let that dream die.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's move on to our next icebreaker, which is talking about wildlife we've interacted with. And this topic is important because we're wild creatures and we're existing in a natural world. I also like this question because I spend a lot of time in the city. Mm. So the animals I'm interacting with or the wildlife I'm interacting with is a little bit limited.
Mm-hmm.
But it is nice to take a moment and pause and really appreciate the natural abundance around you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is spring, which is funny because we recorded some podcasts out of order.
Oh.
And the one about to come out is Dead of Winter.
Oh.
And we do talk about it.
Well.
We're like, everyone's sad. The days are long. Mm-hmm. And this might be a notable shift because it's now spring.
Uh-huh.
And you can tell everything's budding and blooming and the birds are chattering.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there's a lot of magpies. I'm really familiar with the magpies in my area. But there's a lot of itty-bitty birds. Mm-hmm. And just letting your eyes settle and noticing all the little ones, you're like, wow, they're everywhere, has been really exciting. Yeah, yeah, so those are wildlife I've encountered recently. What about you? Have you seen anything?
I think similarly, because of my work schedule and where I live, that I don't often see a lot of wildlife, I do see a decent amount of squirrels.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of as I'm driving around, but I have also been kind of very aware of birds, especially this time of year. Like, bird song always feels like such a gift to me. If I'm running an errand or something and I'm in the parking lot of Target or whatever, that being able to be surrounded by bird song is just a reminder of we're alive and everything is moving and everything is happening and life kind of continues through things. I'm also thinking about there was a time a couple days ago when I was driving and I was stopped at a stoplight and I looked over and there was a a small flock of birds, but they were doing that murmuration thing in the air where they were flying. I'm gesturing for all you listeners. You can imagine what my hands are doing. But they were, you know, flocking and kind of turning and going one direction, and they would all settle off the telephone wires, and then they would all lift up and then swirl around in the air, and it would get thicker and then thinner and create these different shapes, and then they'd resettle. And I just watched them sitting at that.
Like ebb and weave.
Yeah. It was beautiful.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, there's something really incredible about seeing animals together.
They're magic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nature's magic.
Nature's magic. That's it. Mm-hmm. Our final icebreaker is discussing content we've been consciously consuming recently. Mm-hmm. And this icebreaker came about because we consume a lot of media throughout our lives that can have kind of a negative impact on us. It's really important to consume content that benefits your well-being. Mm-hmm. It is really important in a world where we are so limited in our choices and our actions to consume content that empowers individuals or that supports artists who are not maybe as mainstream, or by mainstream, I mean white, cisgendered.
Hey-ya!
It's kind of a way we can use capitalism in our favor is consciously consuming products, which actually makes me have two conscious consumption contents. I cannot say that. Conscious consumption contents. All right, listeners. We're going to find a new quippy name for this segment.
your triple C.
Your triple C's.
Your triple C rec.
Welcome to the triple C segment. My first one is an Instagram handle. It's an account I follow on Instagram. They're called Queer Sex Therapy.
Yes, I love Queer Sex Therapy.
I love them.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. I really like them. They have a lot of tips and advice, and they tell their own journey about their relationship with sex and intimacy with partners in a queer space. I think it's really empowering to see queer individuals be open and loud about sex and relationships.
Yes.
It's nice to see these things reflected back to me, like these embarrassing things. I'm like, oh, same. You too? Oh, cool. Thank God.
I was the only one.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, we talk a lot about queer beauty and like queer sex being like a natural thing in the world. And so it is nice to like have someone really openly discussing that.
Preach.
Yeah.
Love that.
Love that. Back to you, Liz. Tell me about your CCC.
Mm-hmm. My CCC. My CCC rec. Gosh, I have like 100,000. Let me narrow it down. I'll narrow it down to two. One is also an Instagram handle, which is Consent Wizardry.
Ooh.
Which is run by a consent educator and intimacy coordinator named Mia. They are a non-binary theater practitioner and educator, and I really love the way that they embrace and explore the nuance surrounding consent. That consent, we don't really do ourselves any favors if we say, like, consent is no means no and yes means yes and it has to be enthusiastic, because real life does not reflect that. And it's hard to make that model fit real life. And so I really appreciate both the perspective and the tools that they give in practicing consent, of it being an ongoing practice and kind of a shared responsibility.
I like the ongoing practice of it.
Yes.
That, like, your answer can change.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a fluid thing. It's an evolving, ongoing practice of consent.
Yeah, and that I have a responsibility to check in with you, but if you have something going on, you also have to practice being able to communicate that as well.
I don't know what's going on in your life unless you share. Yeah.
Yeah, and it does a really good job of doing that without victim blaming. Mm-hmm. You know? So highly recommend Consent Wizardry on Instagram. I also recommend the TV show Reservation Dogs, which is currently on Hulu. It's so good. It's so good. It's like so good.
Give us a brief explanation. What's it about? Why should people watch it?
It's an indigenous created show about...
Which we love to see. Yes. I love to see current indigenous work because it's not a homogenous group of people stuck in the past.
Yes.
Like, this is a living, breathing people.
Yeah.
And stories.
Yes. I love that so much. It's also the most indigenous writers in one writer's room on like any project ever. Wow. There's like 11.
That's cool.
So it follows the story of four teenagers who are part of the Muscogee Nation in Oklahoma and how they are dealing with the recent death of one of their friends and their goals to get off the reservation and go to California and build a new life there. I really appreciate that it is about indigenous people made by indigenous people with indigenous actors. There's no like, there's no whiteness. It's not through the lens of whiteness.
Yeah.
And
which feels rare.
Yeah. And I also appreciate, I follow a couple of other indigenous creators on Instagram and TikTok, and they've talked about how very often indigenous storytelling is more circular and more braided and more layered and more of a spiral and more expansive than European storytelling, which is very linear.
Mm-hmm.
And we literally, if you take a class on novel writing, there's a line you draw like on a little graph of like inciting moment, and then the line goes up until the climax, and then it goes down with the denouement. But the show really embraces the magic of storytelling and the circular braided nature. Like, things don't have to make linear sense to be effective storytelling.
Preach to that.
Mm-hmm. Mm. What was your other recommendation that you were going to make?
It's a resource I found. It's a database of products that, how I want to phrase this, don't give money to IDF.
I love that.
Yes. And so you can look up products in the store and say, ah, alas, this hummus is directly supports genocide.
Yeah.
No, but this toothpaste does not directly give money to genocide.
I love that.
Which can be a limiting resource that is not accessible to everyone. Mm. But if you have the means to make a small choice of toothpaste,
mm-hmm.
it can be really useful. I really appreciated that resource. If I can find it, I will link it in the show notes.
Okay.
I want to now move on to our topic for today. Today we have joining us Liz Whitaker, who is an excellent theater practitioner who's been working 20 plus years in Salt Lake City. You are known for acting, directing, for your behind the scenes work, but most importantly, we're bringing you on today to talk about your work in intimacy coordination. Do you mind telling us what on earth is intimacy coordination?
Yeah. So when we are doing scenes of nudity, of simulated sex, or even things like kissing scenes or things where there's like high physical contact, it's helpful to have an expert in the room. So my work is I serve as a choreographer, as a advocate, and liaison. So what that means is that I choreograph moments of intimacy. And then I also do all of the kind of consent and coordination work around that intimacy. So if we're doing film and television, a simulated sex scene, then I will bring barriers and robes and modesty garments, and I will chat with the rest of the crew about, you know, if you don't need to be in the room, don't be in the room.
Mm.
For theater, sometimes I'll do like a consent workshop for everyone in the project. And then I will help to choreograph moments of intimacy, whether it's kissing or moving a dead body around in a farce like Clue or Arsenic and Old Lace, or if it's simulated sex or just kissing scenes. And I used to be really rigid about choreographing, but then I realized that I wasn't actually empowering actors by telling them what to do. It's counterintuitive.
You had mentioned empower. Why is that important?
Yeah. So I'm a little wary sometimes of using the word creating a safe space mm-hmm. for artists to work.
Maybe let's back that up, actually, before we dive into empowerment. Why is intimacy, coordination, and direction important in creative spaces?
So it's kind of twofold. One of them is that there are a lot of power dynamics in the arts, and a particularly strong power dynamic between an actor and a director. Mm. Because a director can hire and fire you. They also can have a lot of control over your reputation. They have control over things like the rehearsal schedule sometimes. There's just a lot of power there. And regardless of how thoughtful or how much consent training or what a good relationship a director has with an actor, that power dynamic cannot be erased. It's not possible. We can like try and we can say like, it's fine, tell me no. But our
at the end of the day, like, they're your boss. And like, especially, it depends mm-hmm. on the relationship. Like, this could be a kind old man who's kind of a father figure. Mm-hmm. It could be someone you're a little scared of. It could be someone you have distaste for. It could be someone you don't feel comfortable being vulnerable with.
Yeah. So having like a third party mm-hmm. who...
A neutral party.
Yeah. Who, you know, I don't really take sides, but if I do need to take sides, I will take sides of the people with the least amount of power in the room, which most of the time is actors. And it's helpful too, because if a director is like, I want them to do this, but I don't know how to say it without being a creep, that I can like translate. Mm-hmm. Or if the actors are like, this really isn't working for me, and I've tried bringing it up with the director, but they're so busy, that I can be like, I got you.
Yeah.
I can talk to the director about this thing. So that's one reason that's really important. It's kind of the main reason that it became an industry.
And especially in the wake of Me Too, we are seeing a lot of abuse of power and straight up abuse in theater, film, artistic spaces.
Yeah. This role has sort of been done unofficially by, you know, first ADs and stage managers and makeup people. Mm-hmm. People have just been sort of picking up the slack, but it was literally in 2017 and the Weinstein case that the industry as a whole was like, okay,
we need to make this a safer space.
Yeah,
for
this has
everyone.
This has to change.
So it's important to make a really safe space. Like, what you're doing, I feel like, mm-hmm. at its core is making a safe space for actors.
Yeah.
But more than that, you had mentioned you're trying to empower actors.
Yeah. So when we talk about creating a safe space, what I mean by that is that everyone has a right to a harassment-free workplace where their humanity is honored.
Humanity is honored.
Yes.
Wow.
What I don't mean is that you will never, ever be triggered. Mm. Because if I were to try to create that kind of safe space, what I would have to do logistically is go to every single person in the room and ask what their triggers are. Mm-hmm. They have to know what their triggers are. Then I have to communicate those triggers to everyone else in the room.
Try to find a way to prevent it from happening.
Yeah. When that's not really feasible.
I remember actually reached out to you a couple of years ago because I was wondering how to phrase a trigger warning for a player I was writing. And you gave me some really good feedback. And at the end, I really struggled because I'm like, some of these trigger warnings is just that this is just an emotional play.
Yeah.
And is it a trigger or is that just being human?
Right. yeah. And sometimes the work
And I'm that, like, this may cause a human reaction.
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, the work that we're doing is hard.
Yeah.
Like you and I, before we started recording, we were talking about the play Night Mother, which is,
Deals a lot with suicide.
yeah,
Front and center.
actively.
It's 90 minutes of fully discussing suicide. It's so intense.
Yeah.
And to be able to have a safe emotional, physical space
Yeah.
is so important.
Yeah. So I, a lot of times I'll talk about empowering actors as opposed to creating a safe space for them. I'll do my best. Like if there's harassment going on or racism or any kind of ism that is degrading someone's humanity, I'll check in and speak up. But I also want to create a space in which actors have the tools to be able to say, hey, that wasn't cool. Or, hey, I have a boundary around this. Can I find another way to do this? Or, I'm doing great. I just need 5 minutes.
I'm like, I'm not okay, but I will be. Like, I need some time.
Because a lot of times actors, and I've felt this as an actor, it's so easy to be afraid of, like, time is money. I'm going to interrupt the rehearsal process. I'm going to interrupt the filming. Everyone's going to get mad at me, and then I'm going to be seen as difficult to work
And then I'll
with.
never work again, which seems catastrophizing, but it's reality.
And so many actors were literally actually told by our teachers and other
In
directors,
fundamental stages of our careers,
yes, as like 19-year-olds in college,
if you are
told,
difficult to work with,
yeah.
or like something I think a lot about how I was raised, is it is unprofessional to have reservations or to disrupt the process, to slow down the process, which could mean if you are not ready to kiss a grown man who has gross teeth and you're a child, it's unprofessional. And you need to, without a lot of times rehearsal or oversight, or much time with this person, you have to just unscripted, just
Go
do
for it.
Just go for it. Just do some really intense sexual scenes. Just go for it. Let's just put it on its feet. Let's just go for it.
And if you don't do it, there's a line of people out the door who are willing.
That's the
So,
narrative we're told as
yeah.
performers.
And that impetus to say yes to things, to be willing to say yes to things, comes not only from our acting training, but it can come from the gender that we are socialized as. It can come from our family dynamics. It can come from
Religious trauma.
religious trauma. There are so It can come from so many directions that it really takes active work to practice saying no, or can I please have a minute? So part of what I want to do, a part of what I do as the intimacy professional in the room, is to be the person to step in and say, hey, before we do this kiss on screen, let me chat with the actors really quick. And I'll say, hey, can you share with this other person what your boundaries are on your physical body today? Are you okay with hair being touched? Are you ticklish? Also, I've got Listerine strips and chapstick here. And for this kiss, we won't be able to see tongue, so let's not do that. And this kiss should probably not be any longer than 4 seconds.
I love the parameters of that. That makes it so simple. Yeah, this is going to be uncomfortable and a little awkward, but I can touch my mouth to your mouth for 4 seconds. Okay, cool. I can do that. And also, then you can make a story around that. Is it a tender first kiss? Is it an apology? Is it passionate?
And that is absolutely where I live.
I had a couple of things I wanted to mention. What are some of the tools that actors and theater arts professionals can use to be safe in intimacy? And my other question, in our last episode, Amanda Madden, filmmaker and creator of Reflection Collective, they were talking about how boundaries really help create art, and I was wondering if you agreed with that.
Yes, I so agree with that. Okay, let me talk about tools and then I'll talk about art. The tools that I share most often are sort of scripts, which in some ways comes from my experience as an autistic woman, which is a recent discovery. I am 38 years old and I've known this for like 2 years. But I, as a girl in elementary school in the 90s,
That language didn't exist.
No, didn't exist. But one of the things that empowers me in interactions with other people is if I have kind of a rough script of like what's expected of me, what this other person is supposed to say or do, I kind of, having that script is helpful. The other reason that it's helpful to have a script, sometimes actual words of how to navigate something, is because when we're in a sort of high stakes emotional situation or we're being asked to do something that we're uncertain about, our brains, our nervous systems can go into a little bit of a trauma response, a little bit of a freeze or a fight. Freeze is the one I see most commonly.
Yeah. So people are like, why didn't you speak up?
Yeah. And you're like, because my brain wasn't working like that.
Because I didn't have the words until like actually 2 days later.
Yeah.
When my system was regulated.
Yeah. So if you have in your mind already the words, I have a boundary around blank.
Okay.
It means that in the moment when someone is like, ooh, and what if I like grabbed your shoulders there?
I have a boundary around.
Yeah.
That.
About being grabbed suddenly or about around my shoulders. Mm-hmm. If you have that immediately accessible, it's really helpful.
And then you can work around that.
Mm-hmm.
You can say, well, we can't touch your shoulders, but we do need to create this sense. So maybe we can do this instead.
Yeah.
Do you feel like, comfortable with this?
Yeah. How do you feel about, okay, if it's not shoulders, what about costume? Like, what are you wearing? Can I grab costume?
Yeah, yeah.
Because that still has that same feeling of suddenness, but it empowers you.
And you don't have to make someone feel unsafe.
Yes, exactly.
You never have to make anyone feel unsafe.
Yes.
What a world where your working environment doesn't have to be unsafe.
Yes. Exactly.
This is theater. This is film. This is not
real life.
Yeah, which is like we're just telling stories, which is very powerful and important.
Yeah.
But this doesn't need to have that level of danger and unsafety, you know?
Yeah. So the other tool that I share most often, aside from being able to share boundaries, is a sort of ritualistic tap in and tap out to get some closure and to start the work.
And really contain it.
Yeah. And this actually goes around the idea of boundaries and safety work. So like if we're about to do a scene from Night Mother, we can look at each other, take a deep breath together, sometimes do a clap or a handshake like that. And that means our work has started. We are in the room. We can take a moment and say, hey, as a reminder, please don't touch my ears. Everything else is fine today. Or, hey, I worked out really hard yesterday and I cannot get on my knees and get back up without it taking 5 minutes.
Or like, I'm having some personal things.
Yeah.
I'm keeping it together. I'm not okay.
Yeah.
But.
And then I can say, okay, so then for this scene, do you want to like, are there things you want to mark because of where you're at today? Or just need to just speak it into the space?
I just needed to say that.
Right. Good.
Yeah.
Thank you for letting me know.
Look, and now we can do the
work.
Oh,
my God. And now I like trust you to know that you have my back.
Exactly.
You heard it here first. Yeah. That's as easy as it is.
It's true. It's so funny that like I've spent so many hours training and then it feels so simple in the room.
Well, you know? I think it's really vulnerable to talk about your body. And we see this in sex a lot too of, oh, by the way, I have this. Or like, I don't want to be touched here. Or I have this going on with me. And that's scary. It's scary and vulnerable.
But the nice thing about it in a scene with multiple people is that you're not the only one doing that.
Yeah.
It's that your fellow actors are doing it too. And then at the end of the scene, after we've worked stuff, if we can then look at each other, take another deep breath together, say, okay, thank you. Good work.
Tap out.
Work is done. Sometimes people need more closure, so I have additional practices and exercises. I recently learned from another intimacy colleague the idea of a closure song.
Ooh.
So like on your way home from rehearsal or for filming, this is the song that you're like, and now I am shifting into myself. I'm letting the rest of the things go. Because when we create a container of boundaries, it gives us so much more freedom as artists, because I know the things that are not going to be okay with you, and you know the things that aren't going to be okay with me. So it means that if we've talked and you've said, yeah, like touch anywhere is fine, if we're feeling the moment and I reach out and I put my hand on your thigh because it makes sense for the character, then you can yes and that, and we can like keep going. And it also means that if I put my hand on your thigh and you're like,
actually,
pause, then it allows people the safety of I am a professional doing this with my colleagues. And another intimacy colleague talked about how you are, as an actor in particular, you are lending your body to a project, but your body does not belong to the project. It belongs to you. And so you get to choose the ways in which your body is being used for this.
Wow. The autonomy and empowerment of having the choice of your body and how you want your body used. Wow.
Because it's yours.
Because it's yours.
Because art, I'm like going to cry about this, because art should never come at the cost of your personhood and your humanity.
Mm-hmm.
Because at a certain point, if you give all of your humanity to your art, you will not have anything left to give it. And if art is not about our humanity, then what are we doing it for?
Like,
then what's the point? Then what is the point? And there are ways in which you can lend parts of your humanity and share parts of yourself with others in a way that doesn't traumatize you or anyone else.
Yeah. That was another issue I had with a project I worked on recently that I didn't trust that the director would hold a safe space for the emotional trauma I knew would be a very real possibility. I don't trust that this isn't going to traumatize the audience. And that's a big reason I signed on to do it, was because I needed to make sure that someone was there to make sure that this wasn't going to traumatize.
Yeah.
So it's a big responsibility to make sure that no one in the space of art is going to be actively traumatized.
Yeah.
Intentionally.
Yeah.
or neglectfully traumatized.
Yeah. That brings up one of the biggest revelations I have had about doing this work in the last few months. So I was lucky enough to be a part of a certification program. I will pause and say certification is not necessary to do meaningful work as an intimacy professional.
Mm-hmm.
It is a helpful way to sort of communicate to employers like, hey, these are my qualifications.
Mm-hmm.
Here they are. It also can open the door for people who traditionally have been marginalized in the arts, that people of color, trans folks. This work is really dominated by women, unusually. So,
unsurprisingly.
Yeah. But for the people whose names have not traditionally been mentioned in rooms where decisions get made, having a certification can help open that door.
Yeah.
When I say I'm getting certified, there's not like one governing body that says like these are the standards of certification. It means that I have met the requirements of this particular program. So I have a cohort that I did a bunch of training with, and now I'm in a mentorship period where I am working with a mentor on whatever current projects I'm working on. And I have regular meetings with her. And one of the things that when I was entering that mentorship period, she talked about kind of letting go of some of the rigidity of my practice. And I sort of understood what she meant. But then, like 3 weeks ago, I was sitting in rehearsal at Shakespeare in Love at West Valley Arts, which is such a dream of a project. And I realized how much tension I was holding in my body.
Actual rigidity.
Like actual rigidity. And I realized it was because I was hyper-vigilantly monitoring everyone's emotions in the room because I thought it was my job, because I'm the intimacy director.
Oh.
And so if people are having a hard time, it's my job to protect them and take care of them. And I was like, maybe this actually isn't mine to carry.
This is a huge responsibility.
Like maybe I don't need to do that. And I was like, I know where it comes from. I know it comes from like oldest daughter and being a teenager in a household where hypervigilance was necessary for emotional survival. And it comes from growing up in Mormonism. And I was like, I can trust that if actors are struggling with something, that they'll tell me.
And that I've given them the tools.
Yeah. And I can also trust that I'll notice. Like, if someone is having a hard time, I'll pick it up. Yeah. I don't have to, like,
I'm good at what I do.
Constantly monitor every single thing that they are doing.
I love that for you.
I know. But I feel like it's also reflected more in my work now as an intimacy director, that there's much more space there for actors to explore and express things, as opposed to me being like, okay, are you okay? Are you okay? Like, are you okay? Mm. So I bring this up because you said something about wanting to make sure that an audience is not intentionally or neglectfully traumatized, which is not your job, Mary.
Yeah.
It's not your job. It's not, it's the collective job of everyone involved in the project. And I, as the intimacy professional, have the things that are going to ping for of like, hey, I have a feeling that the audience might need a break.
Yeah.
Or, hey, I think this is going to be more effective storytelling if you have something humorous to like open the release file.
Yeah.
And I will help you write a content guide.
Mm. And it's their responsibility after the fact to say, that play was a lot for me.
Yeah.
I'm feeling some big things.
Yeah.
The thing is, even the most traumatized people after a play are going to leave that being like, that was intense.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're going to be fine.
It's going to be fine. And I also, I hope it didn't come off as patronizing.
No. Like, it's good to, like, it gave me so much grief through the whole process. I'm like, someone has to protect them.
Yes. And I feel that way so much too. And I feel like a lot of people who enter the intimacy direction coordination world feel that same way.
Well, It stems from a good place, especially given the rampant abuse in theater.
Yeah.
And we've all experienced the rampant abuse.
Yeah.
Some of my formative sexual experiences were from theater.
Which is so tragic.
In theater. I've had countless experiences recently even of like situations that felt icky but not unsafe.
Ooh, yeah.
And not knowing how to talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
But it left me feeling gross about everyone involved, and it made the experience bad for me, and it probably made the experience not as good for the audience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you brought up such an interesting point that there's a difference between icky and unsafe, you know? And I think one of the things that gets in our way as a society, but also in this context, is that we feel like we have to justify to ourselves, I experienced enough harm to justify.
Oh, the abuse. Not abuse, but like discomfort or like my sense of safety.
That we have to like prove to everyone that we are worthy of the care of a survivor.
Jesus.
You know?
Oh, God.
Where like...
Well, I wasn't hit. Like,
yeah. But the other thing about consent and about boundaries is that your boundaries are perfect exactly where they are, and they are yours.
Mm.
It's not the universal. And you don't have to have the same boundaries as everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And if something feels icky to you in a way that you're like, this is not in alignment with my values, or like, I don't feel respected or valued, or I feel like this is perpetuating something that is actually kind of harmful, or nothing bad is happening to me, but I'm seeing other people doing these things that I don't feel comfortable being associated with. We often tell ourselves, well, those things aren't bad enough. But the truth is, you weren't okay. Like, it was icky.
Yeah.
And it's okay for you to also be like, I don't regret doing it.
Yeah.
Or I'm, you know, I was fine. I had the tools to deal, but I wish it had been different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is kind of an evolving practice.
Yes.
Of intimacy coordination. Next time, I want to speak up.
Yeah.
In the moment.
One of the things that my mentor has talked about is the power an intimacy director has to model for actors.
Mm-hmm.
So that if I, as an intimacy director, can say,
I know we're not due for a break yet, but I need 5 minutes. That like sets an example
of like, oh, hey, it's, I was working on this movie recently. It was really intense. It was a lot of ex-Mormon religious trauma and sexual trauma too. And I'm so proud and grateful for the production team that they had an intimacy coordinator on set, not only for the actors, but for the crew.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
There was a designated safe room. There was weighted blankets. There was tools. There was water. There was journals and things. It was so so great. I think I was one of the only people who used it, but I made a point of using it a lot.
Yeah.
Or doing it and being like, I'm making a show of pausing and drinking some water and eating a snack.
Yeah.
So that maybe you also know it's okay
it
to like, it sets the tone of like, oh, I'm going to take a break and sit in silence in the quiet room.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I am stressed. Maybe I don't have to be stressed enough or having a panic attack to use the safe room.
Yeah. You don't have to be actively panicking.
You don't have to be like, passing out to stop and have a snack.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that makes me so happy. I love the fact that there's so much enthusiasm. There is still a lot of pushback around this work, which is frustrating.
It's a good litmus test for me of like, oh, why are you hesitant to this?
Yeah. And I understand. I think people sometimes think that I am going to come in and be like the sex police and be like HR on steroids.
There was a movie just came out, Love Lies Bleeding. So good.
Love Lies Bleeding. Oh my God, oh my, I lost my mind.
I lost my mind. Okay. The, I forget their name, but they, not Kristen Stewart, the other actor. She was talking about the intimacy coordination of it.
Because
there's a lot of sexual scenes in it. And she was talking about how like a lot of people get nervous about intimacy coordinators because it's so choreographed and like it takes the spontaneity out of it. She's like, it's already scripted.
Yeah.
You already know what's going to happen. What more spontaneity? It's nice to have these boundaries of, okay, cool. So you're going to be naked in the shower together and then you're going to put your arms around like this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then you're going to kiss and then we can move that around too.
Mm-hmm. And different intimacy coordinators work in different ways. I have started doing a thing where I ask actors and sometimes directors of like, okay, on a scale of 1 to 10, where 1 is we talk about boundaries and then we explore by impulse and instinct, or 10, every single beat is choreographed.
Where would you
like to work?
Ooh, that's nice. That's nice getting everyone involved.
Yeah, because some actors are like, I feel really confident. I know this person.
We have a good flow.
Good. We can work at like a 2. And then some people are like, I have never done this before and I do not know what is happening and I feel really, really nervous.
I've never been kissed.
So can we work at a 10? And then the other thing that happens is that shifts. And
like,
I can kind of
hey,
like,
actually, I know I said a 9. But
yeah.
Can we tone it back to maybe a 5?
Yeah. And I can like gauge that too as we're working and say like, it feels like, ooh, sometimes something that'll happen, I'll be like, yeah, can you see what happens if that touch doesn't actually make contact? If, like, you want to touch, but then it doesn't happen?
Ooh.
Like, what happens to the scene?
How dynamic.
Yeah.
It feels like adding another dynamic artist in the room.
Yeah, because I also, my favorite part of the work, the consent part is important and wonderful. The part where I find the greatest amount of joy is in the storytelling, is in the character, is in the script, is in what are the moments, what are the stories that we're telling, and how do we do that? And in that sense, I often feel kind of like a director of theater.
Because you are taking charge of the arc of the story.
If I'm watching the scene, I'll sometimes say, hold, I don't think you need to look at the paper. I think your eye contact stays with her the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, keep that connection. Or you're starting, I noticed you started to do this thing with your body where your breath was like up in your chest. Can you lean even more into that? Because it's showing this story of like arousal. And I don't know if you were conscious of doing it, but it's telling the
story. That's such a cool thing to have in the room because in theater, a lot of times the director's dealing with everything. They're dealing with the actors, the design, the all the behind the scenes, the whole picture. Sometimes these these intimacy moments get lost.
Mm-hmm. You figure it out in the hallway.
Yeah, a lot of times they're like, go out, I'm going to give you a couple minutes of practice time, and we'll run the scene when you get back.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's really what you're adding. You add a lot of value to the storytelling in the room.
It's like my favorite thing. I'm so obsessed with it.
Are there any standards of practice or like universal guidelines?
This work is guided generally more by principles, mm-hmm. but there are kind of three hard and fast rules. One of them is intimacy directors never become romantically or sexually involved with anyone on a project.
Good ethics.
That's a pretty hard and fast rule. Another is that if there is any sexuality portrayed, any sex acts are simulated. So that includes any kind of penetrative sex of anus or vagina, any digital penetration, so any using hands, anytime
mouths too.
I'm yeah, assuming. mouths and hands. Nothing ever touches genitals.
Yeah, nothing. Genitals are not like actually touching things.
Yeah, so like on film. I don't think this is really done in theater very much. On film, if the director or screenwriter wants to see a hand on a penis, that is a prosthetic penis.
Is that always the case?
It is now. those are the SAG-AFTRA rules.
Okay, because I've heard stories that they're like, oh no, they really had sex.
Yeah, that's not what we're doing. Because that is a different industry. That is sex work, which is a valid industry. But it's not the one we're doing. Right. It's not what we're doing. The other reason is whenever we are doing simulated sex, we always have some sort of barrier mm-hmm. in between genitals for two reasons. Number one is to reduce sensation. Mm-hmm. That just helps actors do better work. And then people aren't worried about like getting an erection or arousal or anything like that. Number two is it prevents fluid exchange. Because we don't need, if we're doing a simulated sex scene, we don't need to ask people their status. We don't need to ask about their bill of health.
You don't even need to touch that. Yeah.
Yeah. We don't need to know.
That's not necessary in the yeah, work environment.
Absolutely not. So that's principle number two. We are simulating anything. Mm-hmm. The only things we don't simulate are kissing. Hands on breasts or nipples is like sort of an iffy area. Yeah. It's technically allowed, but it seems to be a little bit more, we're a little bit more careful yeah. about it. And then the third rule is that people are allowed to say no.
Yeah.
those are the standard practices. SAG-AFTRA has been really great about.
And SAG-AFTRA is?
SAG-AFTRA is the union for performers for film and television.
And they've recently been striking.
Yeah.
So they've been doing really great work for rights for performers and people working in creative spaces.
Yeah.
So they've been doing a lot of work on mm-hmm.
making sure that this is how things work. Actors Equity, which is the union for live performance, has been dragging its feet a little bit.
You heard it here first.
About kind of standardizing these things. One of the things that I want to mention really quick is that SAG-AFTRA right now does not require intimacy coordinators. Mm. The wording is that a production should make best good faith efforts mm-hmm. to find a qualified intimacy coordinator. And the reason for that is there are not enough of us yet.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah.
So if you were to require an intimacy coordinator for everything,
you'd have to require training.
Yeah. And there just isn't enough. This work has only been done for like 5 years, 5 to 7 years officially.
Yeah.
And you don't want to create a situation in which someone is like, oh, I read a book and I took one workshop on Zoom.
I watched a lot of TikTok videos.
Yeah.
Like, so I feel pretty confident.
And books and TikTok videos and Zoom workshops are all very valuable. But it's not quite enough.
So. Here's a good example. If you have the option to hire me or Liz, let me back that up. If you have the option of no one and me, I'm a great option.
Yeah.
I've watched a lot of videos. I've had my fair share of experience.
Yeah.
Between me and Liz, Liz is a qualified, certified, trained practitioner.
Thank you. Because then the other thing that happens is that if people claim qualifications that they don't have and then do work on a project and everyone has bad experience, then those people are like, well, intimacy coordinators and directors are a waste of time and it's bad and it'll be better without them.
Yeah.
and it ruins it for like the rest of us.
Systemically ruins.
Yeah.
That's a really good gripe to have. Yeah.
So I try not to be mean about it.
Understandably, yes. Okay. What inspired you to start your intimacy coordination journey?
I literally don't remember. All I remember...
I've always been doing this since the beginning of time. Yeah. I have always...
This has just been my career. No, I've been doing theater for 100 million years, and I have known my entire life that this is what I wanted to do.
Wow.
I cannot remember a time when I didn't want to do this. Of course, as like a 9-year-old, I was like, I want to be a marine biologist. But... deep down.
The crossover of theater and marine biology.
It's because of all those movies about dolphins and whales in the 90s. Yeah. That's what it had to have been.
Yeah.
But I just have always known that I wanted to do theater. And then in late 2019, an organization called Theatrical Intimacy Education was doing a workshop. It was like 2-day workshop, 8-hour days. So it's kind of intense. But a friend invited me to it, and I was like, yeah, that sounds awesome.
Sure.
And then I got to the workshop, and I was like, oh, holy shit. This is the perfect cross-section of the things I'm passionate about, of theater and physical storytelling and mental health advocacy and social justice.
And there's all these people who are like me and who care about this, and there's an organization that is doing the things that I love with the crossover.
Exactly.
Wow.
Oh, my God. And so I did that workshop, and then I was like, I am going to do so much work in 2020. And then 2020 was like, no, bitch. But because of 2020 and because of the unemployment benefits, I poured so much money into doing as much online training as I could get my hands on.
Wow.
So I did so much. And there, you can learn a lot on Zoom. It's a little limited when it comes to choreography.
Yeah.
But the principles of consent and power dynamics and non-coercive language, all of those things. So I spent 2020 really, really focusing on training. And I try to balance, I try to have like a 1-to-3 ratio of training to work.
Ooh.
Nowadays.
Ooh.
For every 3 projects I'm working on, I try to have 1 workshop that I'm attending or 1 book that I'm working on.
It feels like a good practice for a working professional.
And because it's like such a new industry too, I feel like there's so much to learn. I think back to like the first projects that I worked on and I'm like embarrassed about them.
Well, you've grown so much.
Yeah. The way that I would approach, and especially the first film, the first feature that I worked on was a fully nude choreographed sex scene in front of a giant window with relatively famous people. And I was so intimidated. And I'm fairly confident that I did not cause harm. But I did not do great work. Because I was scared and still learning. Yeah. And now, if I were to get that job again, I would feel so much more confident. So much more relaxed.
Yeah.
I would have so many more tools. And so those experiences remind me, keep training. Because otherwise... you are now 10 years from now going to look back on the work you did now and be like, oh my God, what were you thinking?
God. Yeah. We're always growing and evolving and changing and you have to keep up with yourself.
Yes, exactly.
Wow. I'm really curious. Intimacy coordination and direction feels really tied up in creative spaces. It's definitely... film is necessary, theater necessary. I could see it in dance. Do you see the need, or is there any kind of translation for intimacy coordination outside of creative spaces?
That's a really interesting question. I think the work of being aware of and communicating your boundaries applies to everything.
Yeah.
It applies to family dynamics and like when you are signing off of work and your own sexual experiences. I think the idea of having a coordinator, like I'm trying to think of the visual arts or family dynamics.
Yeah. I'm having I'm like in the office space. I'm like, why on earth would you, no, you shouldn't need one because you shouldn't
need one. Right. I do feel like there is absolutely space for, I think a better fit would be someone who is a mental health care practitioner.
Ooh.
Because I am not.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah.
I have training in trauma-informed practices. I have training in trauma responses and in mental health first aid, but I am unqualified to offer therapy.
Yeah.
And doing so would cross my own boundary mm-hmm. of opening myself up to a caretaking relationship in a professional or friendship capacity? Setting.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not going to work for me. So I think more of a mental health care professional would work better in other situations.
I like that. I think that's a great person to have. It feels kind of like a watchdog of like,
yeah.
This is why company morale is bad.
Yeah.
It's this.
God, can you imagine cultural shift if every company had a qualified mental health professional?
Just a professional.
Like,
yeah.
Just available. That'd be amazing.
What a world. Oh, what a dream. Ooh, so I wanted to give you a few moments to chat about some of the recent work you've done with intimacy coordination.
I recently did another interview and someone asked me, like, what are some of your favorite projects that you've worked on? And it's always whatever one I'm doing now.
Yeah, yeah, right.
So often. I will say I love Shakespeare with my whole heart as a writer myself and as a theater nerd and as a history nerd and as an actor and director. I just really love Shakespeare. And I've gotten to do a lot of either Shakespeare or Shakespeare adjacent projects.
Cool.
This
yeah.
year. So I did a ridiculous, chaotic, wonderful project called Spicy Shakespeare.
I heard about that.
So fun.
Yeah, they did intimate scenes uh-huh. from Shakespeare while eating spicy peppers.
Yep.
Fun.
It was so fun.
Fun.
It was so delightful. So I got to do like 10 different Shakespeare pieces. And then I've done 2 shows that are like retellings of Shakespeare. And then I'm currently working on Shakespeare in Love at West Valley Arts that is just such a dream.
Like based off the movie?
Yeah.
What a great movie.
It's so good. And there was a point at rehearsal a few days ago. I've been, you know, the director has been calling the ensemble the Lost Boys.
Of course.
Even though it's not all boys. I've been calling them the pirates on the Pirates of the Caribbean ride because at any given moment that the ensemble's on stage, you could take a gif and it looks like a moment from the ride. But one of the cast members sat down next to me in the rehearsal and she was like, have you seen Ted Lasso? And I was like, yeah. And she like pointed to the ensemble and she was like, that's what this is. And it's absolutely true. These wholesome, wholesome characters and these incredible actors who have done so much work to create these full characters it's so good. I also recently did intimacy for a film, a short film called Ed, about how a young man's pornography use is affecting his ability to connect with real people.
Mm.
Which felt very relevant to Utah. I was a little hesitant about that project because I didn't want to send the message that pornography or masturbation is bad.
Yeah.
Like I didn't want to join that shame wagon.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
That's very common here. But the script is very not that. It's very personal to how one person interacts with and uses pornography as opposed to being able to connect with someone else. So I really enjoyed that. Because of the timing of this episode, if none of these things are available for you to check out, I will also say I am on Instagram at Intimacy with Liz. And I often post, I do a lot of education on that page of like, here's principles of intimacy. But I'll also do project shout outs. So if you are in the Salt Lake or Utah Valley.
To date on Liz's projects.
Yeah, and also I don't do as much work for film just because there isn't as much work in film, but I will also post about those projects when they're available.
Great. Mm-hmm. And so if people wanted to hire you as an intimacy coordinator, they could reach out via...
Yes. I also have a website that's the same. It's intimacywithliz.com. And I also, if you follow me on Instagram, there's a link there. DMs are welcome. Texts are welcome. Emails are welcome. Intimacy with Liz.
Great. I'm really thrilled to keep following your work and to work with you in the future.
Yes.
Yes, yes.
I want to do all the things.
All the things. This has been a really great chat.
Yeah, I
agree. We will link how to find you in our show notes, Intimacy with Liz. Mm-hmm. Oh, what a great time. Liz, you've been such a joy. This has been the Dude Care Podcast. You can find us on Instagram at Dude Care Podcast. We have to thank AJ Vanzeman for the intro and outro music, as well as Tyler Gibbs with Audio House for this really dope recording studio. And to give you some good advice from George's father, use your head. Be clever.
Bye-bye.
Yay, bye.